There used to be a rich old oaf who made his home at Oxford, a carpenter by trade, and took in boarders. With him used to dwell a student who had done his studies well, but he was poor. For all that he had learned, it was toward astrology his fancy turned. He knew a number of figures and constructions by which he could supply men with deductions if they should ask him at a given hour whether to look for sunshine or for shower, or want to know whatever might befall, events of all sorts. I can't count them all. He was known as Handy Nicholas, this student, well versed in love. He knew how to be prudent, going about unnoticed, sly and sure. In looks, no girl was ever more demure. Lodged at this carpenter's, he lived alone. He had a room there that he made his own, festooned with herbs, and he was sweet himself as licorice or ginger. On a shelf above his bed's head, neatly stowed apart, he kept the trappings that went with his art. And up above a pretty zither lay, on which at night so sweetly would he play, that with the music the whole room would ring. Angelus to the Virgin, he would sing. And then the song that's known as the King's Note. Blessings were called down on his merry throat. So this sweet scholar passed his time, his end being to eat and live upon his friend. This carpenter had newly wed a wife and loved her better than he loved his life. He was jealous, for she was 18 in age. He tried to keep her close as in a cage, for she was wild and young, and old was he, and guessed that he might smack of cuckoldry. His ignorant wits had never chanced to strike on Cato's word that man should wed his like. Men ought to wed where their conditions point, for youth and age are often out of joint. But now, since he had fallen in the snare, he must, like other men, endure his care. Fair this young woman was, her body trim as any mink, so graceful and so slim. She wore a striped belt that was all of silk, a piecework apron white as morning milk about her loins and down her lap she wore. White was her smock, her collar both before and on the back embroidered all about in coal black silk. Inside as well as out. She was a prettier sight to see by far than the blossoms of the early pear tree are. Far brighter was the dazzle of her hue than a coin struck in the tower, fresh and new. As for her song, it twittered from her head, sharp as a swallow perching on a shed, and she could skip and sport as any young ram or calf will gamble, following his dam. High up along her legs she laced her shoes. Oh, she was a pig's knee. She was a primrose for any lord to tumble in his bed or a good yeoman honestly to wed. Now, sir, and again, sir, this is how it was. A day came round when Handy Nicholas, while her husband was at Osney, well away, began to fool with his young wife and play. These students always have a wily head. He caught her in between his legs and said, "Sweetheart, unless I have my will with you, I'll die for stifled love by all that's true," and held her by the haunches hard. "I vow I'll die unless you love me here and now." She turned her head hard from him, this young wife, and said, "I will not kiss you on my life." "Why, stop it now," she said. "Stop, Nicholas, or I will cry out, help, help, and alas, be good enough to take your hands away." Mercy, this Nicholas began to pray and spoke so well and poured it on so fast. She promised she would be his love at last and swore by Thomas a Becket, saint of Kent, that she would serve him when she could invent or spy out some good opportunity. "My husband is so full of jealousy, you must be watchful and take care," she said, "or well I know I'll be as good as dead. You must go secretly about this business."
"Don't give a thought to that," said Nicholas. "A student has been wasting time at school if he can't make a carpenter a fool."
Now in her Christian duty, one saint's day, to the parish church this good wife made her way, and as she went, her forehead cast a glow as bright as noon, for she had washed it so it glistened when she finished with her work. Serving this church, there was a parish clerk whose name was Absalom, a ruddy man with goose-grey eyes and curls like a great fan that shone like gold on his neatly parted head. His tunic was light blue and his nose red, and he had patterns that had been cut through like the windows of St. Paul's in either shoe. A merry devil, as true as God can save. He knew how to let blood, trim hair and shave, or write a deed of land in proper phrase, and he could dance in 20 different ways in the Oxford fashion, and sometimes he would sing a loud falsetto to his fiddle string or his guitar. No tavern anywhere, but he had furnished entertainment there. This Absalom, so jolly and so gay, with a censer went about on the saint's day, censing the parish women, one and all, many the doting look that he let fall, and specially on this carpenter's young wife. To look at her, he thought, was a good life. She was so trim, so sweetly lecherous. I dare say that if she had been a mouse and he a cat, he would have made short work of catching her. This jolly parish clerk had such a heart full of love hankerings, he would not take the woman's offerings. No, no, he said, it would not be polite. The moon, when darkness fell, shone full and bright, and Absalom was ready for love's sake with his guitar, to be up and awake, and toward the carpenter's brisk and amorous he made his way, until he reached the house a little after the cocks began to crow. Under a casement he sang sweet and low, "Dear lady, by your will be kind to me," and strummed on his guitar in harmony. This lovelorn singing woke the carpenter, who said to his wife,
"What, Alison, don't you hear Absalom singing under our bedroom wall?"
"Yes, God knows, John," she answered. "I hear it all."
"What would you like?" In this way things went on till jolly Absalom was woebegone for wooing her, awake all night and day. He combed his curls, he made himself look gay, he swore to be her slave and used all means to court her with his gifts and go-betweens. He sang and quavered like a nightingale, he sent her sweet spiced wine and seasoned ale, cakes that were piping hot, mead sweet with honey, and since she was town-bred, he proffered money. Sometimes, to keep his talents in her gaze, he acted Herod in the mystery plays, high on the stage. But what can help his case? For she so loves this handy Nicholas that Absalom is living in a bubble. He hath nothing but a laugh for all his trouble. One Saturday, when the carpenter had gone to Osney, Nicholas and Alison agreed that he should use his wit and guile, the simple, jealous husband to beguile. For this was his desire, and hers as well. At once, with no more words, this Nicholas fell to working out his plan. He would not tarry, but quickly to his room began to carry both food and drink to last him out a day, or more than one, and told her what to say if her husband asked her about Nicholas. She must say she had no notion where he was. She hadn't laid eyes on him all day long. He must be sick, or something must be wrong. This was the plan, and Nicholas kept away, shut in his room, for that whole Saturday. He ate and slept, or did as he thought best, till Sunday. When the sun was going to rest, the carpenter began to wonder greatly where Nicholas was, and what might ail him lately. "Now, by St. Thomas, I begin to dread all isn't right with Nicholas," he said. "He hasn't, God forbid, died suddenly. The world is ticklish these days, certainly. Today I saw a corpse to church go past, a man that I saw working Monday last. 'Go up,' he told his chore-boy. 'Call and shout, knock with a stone, find what it's all about and let me know.' The boy went up and pounded and yelled as if his wits had been confounded. 'What? How? What's doing, Master Nicholas? How can you sleep all day?' But all his fuss was wasted, for he could not hear a word. He noticed at the bottom of a board a hole the cat used when she wished to creep into the room, and through it looked in deep, and finally of Nicholas caught sight. This Nicholas sat gaping there upright, as though his wits were addled by the moon when it was new. The boy went down, and soon had told his master how he had seen the man. The carpenter, when he heard this news, began to cross himself.
"Help us, St. Fridy's Wide. Little can we foresee what may betide. The man's astronomy has turned his wit, or else he's in some agonizing fit. I always knew that it would turn out so. What God has hidden is not for men to know. Give me a staff. I'll pry up from the floor while you, Robin, are heaving at the door. He'll quit his books, I think." He took his stand outside the room. The boy had a strong hand, and by the hasp he heaved it off at once. The door fell flat. With gaping countenance, this Nicholas sat studying the air as still as stone.
He was in black despair, the carpenter believed, and hard about the shoulders caught and shook him and cried out rudely, "What? How? What is it? Look down at us, wake up! Think of Christ's passion, Nicholas."
Choosing his time, this handy Nicholas produced a dreadful sigh and said, "Alas, this world, must it be all destroyed straightway?" "What?" asked the carpenter.
"What's that you say? Do as we do, we working men, and think of God."
Nicholas answered, "Get me a drink, and afterwards I'll tell you privately of something that concerns us, you and me. I'll tell you only, you among all men." This carpenter went down and came again with a draught of mighty ale, a generous quart. As soon as each of them had drunk his part, Nicholas shut the door and made it fast and sat down by the carpenter at last and spoke to him.
"My host," he said, "John, dear, you must swear by all that you hold sacred here that not to any man will you betray my confidence. What I'm about to say is Christ's own secret. If you tell a soul, you're undone, and this will be the toll. If you betray me, you shall go stark mad."
"No, Christ forbid it. By his holy blood, speak up just as you like. I'll never tell, not wife nor child, by him that harrowed hell."
"Now, John," said Nicholas, "this is no lie. I have discovered through astrology and studying the moon that shines so bright that Monday next, a quarter through the night, a rain will fall and such a mad, wild spate that Noah's flood was never half so great. This world," he said, "in less time than an hour shall drown entirely in that hideous shower. Yes, every man shall drown and lose his life."
"Alas," the carpenter answered, "for my wife, alas, my Alison, and shall she drown?" For grief at this, he nearly tumbled down and said,
"But is there nothing to be done?"
"Why, happily there is, for anyone who will take advice," this handy Nicholas said. "You mustn't expect to follow your own head. If you will act on good advice, no fail, I'll promise, and without a mast or sail, to see that she's preserved. And you and I. Haven't you heard how Noah was kept dry when, warned by Christ beforehand, he discovered that the whole earth with water should be covered? Then you must get into the house right off, for each of us a tub or kneading trough, above all making sure that they are large, in which we'll float away as in a barge, and put in food enough to last a day. Beyond won't matter, the flood will fall away early next morning. Take care not to spill a word to your boy Robin, nor to Jill, your maid. I cannot save her. Don't ask why. I will not tell God's secrets. No, not I. But when you have for her and you and me brought to the house these kneading tubs, all three, then you must hang them under the roof up high to keep our plans from any watchful eye. When you have done exactly as I've said, then put in snug our victuals and our bread. Also an axe to cut the ropes apart, so when the rain comes we can make our start. But one thing I must warn you of downright. Use every care that on that selfsame night when we have taken ship and climbed aboard, no one of us must speak a single word, nor call, nor cry, but pray with all his heart. It is God's will. You must hang far apart, you and your wife, for there must be no sin between you. No more in a look than in the very deed. Go now. The plans are drawn. Go, set to work, and may God spur you on." This simple carpenter went on his way. Many a time he said, "Alack the day." And to his wife he laid the secret bare. She knew it better than he. She was aware what this quaint bargain was designed to buy. She carried on as if about to die and said,
"Alas, go get this business done. Help us escape, or we are dead, each one. I am your true, your faithful wedded wife. Go, my dear husband, save us, limb and life."
And wretchedly he sighs. But he goes off and gets himself a tub, a kneading trough, another tub, and has them on the sly sent home, and there in secret hangs them high beneath the roof. He made three ladders, these with his own hands, and stowed in bread and cheese. And so on Monday, when it drew toward night, he shut the door without a candlelight and saw that all was just as it should be. And shortly they went clambering up, all three. They sat there still and let a moment pass.
Now then, our Father.
Mum, said Nicholas, and piously this carpenter went on saying his prayers. He sat there still and straining, trying to make out whether he heard it raining. The dead of sleep for very weariness fell on this carpenter, as I should guess, at about curfew time or little more. His head was twisted, and that made him snore. His spirit groaned in its uneasiness. Down from his ladder slipped this Nicholas, and Alison too. Downward she softly sped, and without further word they went to bed, where the carpenter himself slept other nights. There were the revels, there were the delights. And so this Alison and Nicholas lay, busy about their solace and their play, until the bell for lords began to ring, and in the chancel friars began to sing. And now on this Monday, woebegone and glum for love, the parish clerk, this Absalom, was with some friends at Osney, and while there, inquired after John the carpenter. A member of the cloister drew him away out of the church and told him, "I can't say, I haven't seen him working hereabouts since Saturday. The abbot sent him out for timber, I suppose. He'll often go and stay at the granary a day or so." Absalom at once felt jolly and light and thought, "Time now to be awake all night, for certainly I haven't seen him making a stir about his door since day was breaking. Don't call me a man if when I hear the cock begin to crow I don't slip up and knock on the low window by his bedroom wall. To Alison at last I'll pour out all me love pangs, for at this point I can't miss whatever happens. At the least, a kiss, some comfort by me word, will come my way. I felt me mouth itch the whole livelong day, and that's a sign of kissing at the least. I dreamed all night that I was at a feast, and now I'll go and sleep an hour or two, and then I'll wake and play the whole night through." When the first cock crow through the dark had come, up rose this jolly lover, Absalom, and dressed up smartly. He was not remiss about the least point. He chewed licorice and cardamom to smell sweet, even before he combed his hair. Beneath his tongue he bore a sprig of Paris like a true love knot. He strolled off to the carpenter's house and got beneath the window. It came so near the ground it reached his chest. Softly, with half a sound, he coughed. "My honeycomb, sweet Alison, what are you doing, my sweet cinnamon? Awake, my sweetheart and my pretty bird. Awake and give me from your lips a word." Said she, "You jack fool, get away from here. So help me God, I won't sing Kiss Me, Dear. I love another more than you. Get on, for Christ's sake, Absalom, or I'll throw a stone. The devil with you. Go and let me sleep." "Ah, that true love should ever have to reap so evil a fortune," Absalom said. "A kiss, at least, if it can be no more than this, give me, for love of Jesus and of me." "And will you go away for that?" said she. "Yes, truly, sweetheart," answered Absalom. "Get ready then," she said, "for here I come." And softly said to Nicholas, "Keep still, and in a minute you can laugh your fill." This Absalom got down upon his knee and said, "I am a lord of pure degree, and after this, I hope, comes more to savour, sweetheart, your grace. And pretty bird, your favour." She undid the window quickly. "That will do," she said. "Be quick about it and get through, for fear the neighbours will look out and spy." Absalom wiped his mouth to make it dry. The night was pitch dark, coal black all about. Her rear end through the window she thrust out. He got no better or worse, did Absalom, than to kiss her with his mouth on the bare bum before he had caught on. A smacking kiss. He jumped back, thinking something was amiss. "Alas," he cried, "what have you made me do?" she said, and banged the window to. Absalom backed away a sorry pace. You bearded him," said Handy Nicholas. "God's body, this is good fair and fit." The luckless Absalom heard every bit and gnawed his mouth. So angry he became, he said to himself, "I'll square you all the same." His hot love had become all cold and ashen. He didn't have a curse to spare for passion. He cried as a child does after being whipped. He railed at love. Then quietly he slipped across the street to a smith who was forging out parts that farmers need round about. Undo the door, Jervis, and let me come.
What? Who are you?
It is I, Absalom.
Absalom, is it? By Christ's precious tree, why are you up so early, Lord? Bless me, what's ailing you? Some gay girl has the power to bring you out, God knows, at such an hour. Yes, by St. Nith. You know well what I mean.
Absalom thought his jokes not worth a bean. Without a word, he let them all go by. He had another kind of fish to fry than Jervis guessed. Lend me this coulter here that's hot in the chimney, friend, he said. Don't fear, I'll bring it right back when I am through. I need it for a job I have to do.
As I'm a rightful smith, I wouldn't refuse it, but Christ's foot, how on earth do you mean to use it?
Let that, said Absalom, be as it may. I'll let you know tomorrow or next day. And took the coulter where the steel was cold and slipped out with it safely in his hold and softly over to the carpenter's wall. He coughed. And then he rapped the window, all as he had done before. Who's knocking there, said Allison? It is a thief, I swear. No, no, said he, God knows, my sugar plum, my bird, my darling, it's your Absalom. I've brought a golden ring my mother gave me, fine and well cut, as I hope God may save me. It's yours if you will let me have a kiss. Now Nicholas was risen for to, and thought he would improve the whole affair. The clerk, before he got away from there, should give his ass a smack, and hastily opened the window and thrust it out quietly, buttocks and haunches, all the way his bum. Up spoke the clerk, this jolly Absalom. Speak, for I cannot see you, dear. You must. And Nicholas let fly a dreadful gust, as loud as if a clap of thunder broke. Absalom was half blinded by the stroke, but ready with his coulter, still red hot, he smote this Nicholas on that naked spot. Off flew the skin, a good handbreadth of fat lay bare, the iron so scotched him where he sat. As for the pain, he thought that he would die, and like a madman he began to cry, help, water, water, help, for God's own heart. At this the carpenter came to with a start. He heard a man cry water, as if mad. It's coming now, was the first thought he had. It's Noah's flood. Alas, God be our hope. He sat up with his axe and chopped the rope, and down at once the whole contraption fell. He didn't take time out to buy or sell till he hit the floor and lay there in a swoon. Then up jumped Nicholas and Allison, and in the street began to cry, help, ho! The neighbours all came running high and low and poured into the house to see the sight. The man still lay there, passed out, cold and white, for in his tumble he had broken an arm. But he himself brought on his greatest harm, for when he spoke he was at once outdone by handy Nicholas and Allison, who told them one and all that he was mad, so great a fear of Noah's flood he had. And everyone there laughed until they cried, and so well had was Allison his bride, for all the jealous watching he could try, and Absalom he kissed her nether eye, and Nicholas got his bottom roasted well. God save this troop. That's all I have to tell.